Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, and welcome back to the Unseen Podcast, a podcast dedicated to missing people, unresolved cases, and UK true crime. Today we're going to be exploring a case that I've been following for a while, and one that really does bring up many more questions than answers. The disappearance of RAF gunner Corrie McKeague from Bury St Edmunds in 2016 is a mystery, and continues to cause his loved ones pain as they try to find out where he is and what happened to him. This episode contains descriptions that some listeners may find distressing, so listener discretion is advised. The market town of Bury St Edmunds in Suffolk has long been known for its notable historical connections and buildings, including its cathedral and abbey. The town is located in the East Anglia Hills, which rise and fall substantially up to around 100 feet above sea level in some areas. It was at RAF Honington, just outside of Bury St Edmunds, on Monday the 26th of September 2016, that something was noted as being strange. 23-year-old airman Corrie McKeague had failed to turn up for work as he should have done that morning, and those that knew him were concerned about it. Corrie wasn't originally from Bury St Edmunds, and was actually born in Perth in Scotland, and was brought up in the town of Cooper in Fife, along with a younger and an older brother. His parents split when Corrie was 9 years old, and he and his brothers live with their mother Nicola in Dunfermline, around 28 miles away. Despite having a normal childhood, his family would later recount that he had not had it easy. The breakup of his parents' relationship hit him hard, and he also struggled academically at school due to his dyslexia. At age 16, Corrie also witnessed an awful incident when one of his childhood friends, Natalie, was hit by a train at 70 miles per hour. The group had been continuing a party that they'd been to and wanted to head over to the woods. These woods were across a railway track, and Natalie tragically was hit by the oncoming train. All the group heard, reportedly, was a bang. Corrie was the one who discovered her body. His mother told the BBC that this really affected him, and affected how he saw the world from then on. She said, "That changed him so much. He really did have an attitude of, I won't waste my life. If I want to do something fun, I will do it. I will take chances because you don't know what's around the corner." When Corrie left school, he originally planned to study hairdressing at a college in Kirkcaldy. However, this didn't work out, and he realised that being a hairdresser was not for him. After leaving college, he then travelled back to Perth to become a fitness trainer. His family stated that at the time, it seemed like he would just never settle down, and spent most of his time partying. Corrie nursed the idea that he wanted to be in the military, having wanted to be a Marine from an early age. It wasn't the Marines that Corrie eventually decided to join, but the Royal Air Force. He was sent to RAF Honington to complete his training in October 2013, and after 3 months he became a gunner in the No. 2 Squadron RAF Regiment. He successfully completed his passing out ceremony, and his family were overjoyed for him, and they were proud of what he had achieved, despite his setbacks and struggles. Curry was only 20 years old, and was set for a fantastic career in the RAF. 3 years later, on that day in 2016, Curry's colleagues were confused and alarmed by the fact that he hadn't turned up for work that day. And it was for this reason that police were called to investigate. His 8-month-old puppy, Lul, was also found to be locked inside Curry's room at the base, and this was not something that he usually did. It was a Monday morning, and the question of where he had been that weekend was in the forefront of everyone's minds. He hadn't been in contact with any family members, and this was worrying and out of character. The police issued an appeal to the public, asking for information about his whereabouts and showing Curry's photograph. Through police investigation and public appeals, investigators were able to establish that Curry had been in the town of Bury St Edmunds that weekend, and he'd been captured on CCTV on the night of Friday the 23rd of September and the early hours of Saturday the 24th. Through this CCTV, detectives were able to create somewhat of a timeline for Curry's evening. It was established that he had gone to the town to have some drinks with some of his friends from RAF Honington. It's reported that he had intended on getting a lift that night with one of the two friends that he was going out with, but they both thought that Curry was getting a lift with the other. That meant that he ended up driving himself into town, with the intention of leaving his car there overnight. Dressed in a pink Ralph Lauren shirt, white trousers and Timberland boots, Curry began his night out as planned. The group first of all went to So Bar for some drinks, before heading over to the Wetherspoons pub. Curry was in good spirits, and people who saw him there described him as being chatty. The bouncer knew Curry as a regular and said that he was his usual bubbly self. Curry did appear drunk to him at this point, but not drunk enough that he didn't know what he was doing. The group then went into the Flex nightclub, located on St Andrew Street South. It was at the nightclub in the early hours of the morning that Curry was asked to leave. The doorman, Will Hook, had noticed that Curry was too drunk to remain in the club. The doorman later told the East Anglian Daily Times about his encounter with Curry, saying that he asked him to leave at around 1:20 a.m. He stated, "It was a pretty normal night. I was on the door at Flex and was out the front when he came in, and I went in soon afterwards as it got busier." He wasn't too drunk, but was worth keeping an eye on. He carried on drinking and got progressively worse. He was too intoxicated to still be there. He noted that when asked to leave, Curry didn't cause any trouble, and the pair chatted outside for a while. He went on to say in the article that Curry often went in with his friends. He said, "He was a nice bloke and very polite. He never caused any trouble before. He enjoyed his weekends out, but never caused any trouble." After being asked to leave the club, Curry decided to get some food from Pizza Mamma Mia, a takeaway located on St Andrew Street North. This was Curry's usual routine on a night out, and it was one of his favourite takeaways. He ordered two burgers, a kebab and some chips before coming back out of the takeaway. He left the takeaway and CCTV footage shows him walk just around the corner and sit down in front of an electrical shop called Hughes. Not long after this, it appears that Curry falls asleep outside the shop. He's asleep for around 2 hours before waking up just after 3 a.m. It was around 3:08 that he reportedly replied to a friend's text message. His text was apparently an image in reply to his friend's text. 16 minutes later, Curry is once again captured on CCTV at 3:24 a.m. He was spotted walking away from the doorway where he'd been sleeping and heading across the junction at St John Street. The area just past this junction was known as the Horseshoe Area and contained several refuse bins which were located at the back of a Greg's Bakery. This is where the CCTV trail ended, as this was the last time he was captured on it. Corrie was not seen leaving the horseshoe area at all, and no other CCTV footage picked him up that morning. This is where Corrie's evening takes a strange turn. Police knew that he had entered this area and had an accurate time for it. However, he never came back out. Why this was remained a mystery. While there was no CCTV in that area itself, the placement of the CCTV cameras in the surrounding streets meant that there was no way that Corrie could have left the horseshoe area unseen and undetected by them. In the area surrounding the horseshoe, there are at least 6 cameras that would have picked him up if he had exited somewhere and went back into any of the other streets. He wasn't picked up on any of these, and this was concerning, because where could Corrie have gone?
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Police decided to release some of the CCTV of Corrie by the Grapes pub and outside the Hughes electrical store. It was hoped that the images might be recognised by someone who might have relevant information. While appealing to the public, the police were also looking into other possible ways of tracing where he might have gone that night. The area in Bury St Edmunds was searched, and interviews of people in the area took place. The idea that Corrie had just disappeared from an area where it was impossible to do so was difficult to comprehend for detectives and his family. It was also concerning that this area in particular was known to be used for illicit activities such as drug use. This wasn't the place where you'd want to hang around in the early hours. The police soon realised that there was another clue to Corrie's whereabouts, his phone signal. The signal showed that in the early hours of the Saturday morning, his phone was in Bury Town Centre. However, by 8 a.m, the signal showed something different. The phone was now 12 miles away in the village of Barton Mills. There was no reason why Corrie would have been in that location, and also, how had he got there without being spotted on CCTV? Police believed that they had the answer to this when on the footage they also spotted a bin truck heading into the horseshoe area where many bins were located. This lorry entered the area close to the time that Corrie had last been seen and then headed back out to a landfill site in Milton in Cambridge. Corrie's phone signal seemed to correlate with the route that the bin lorry took that morning. This became one of the prevailing theories into what had happened to Corrie. The idea that he had perhaps fallen into one of the bins or chosen to sleep in there and then been driven away to landfill was a horrifying one, but one that police believed was plausible. An initial investigation was launched into this theory, with police checking that particular truck to see how much weight it had been carrying at the time. The answer was 11 kilograms. Which was far too light to have Corrie inside it undetected. Following this information, the police therefore had to concede that while the route and Corrie's phone appeared to match, the weight of the truck was an anomaly. A search of the landfill site was therefore not conducted, as it was believed that not only could he have not been in the lorry, but also that he would have been detected before reaching the site anyway. On the family's part, they didn't believe that Corrie would have just fallen asleep inside a bin. His mum Nicola responded to the police's claims that Corrie had slept in a bin on previous occasions. She stated that he took too much pride in his appearance and wouldn't have chosen to sleep there, particularly as he'd driven that night and could have easily slept in his car. At the time, with the landfill theory ruled out, detectives began to consider that Corrie could have chosen to start walking home, with Detective Superintendent Kate Elliott from Suffolk Police telling the BBC. The strongest line of inquiry at that time was that Corrie had tried to walk home. This was also not foolproof, as Corrie had not been spotted anywhere on CCTV. However, there were some indications that he might have attempted to walk. Some witnesses who had seen and spoken to Corrie after he left the club said that he was going to try and walk the 10 miles to RAF Honington. Searches for Corrie continued, and his family used social media extensively to canvass for information and to keep his disappearance at the front of people's minds. As he had expressed that he might attempt to walk back to the base, searches were made of the areas surrounding it, including woodland. Corrie's family had done everything they could on social media, and many people supported them with the moniker of Corrie's Army. His family were given permission to join the official searches, along with volunteers who wanted to help. Many people in the UK and the world were touched by Corrie's disappearance and wanted to help look for him. Unfortunately, nothing was found that related to him, and more appeals were made for anyone who may have seen or spoken to Corrie at that time to come forward. Corrie's mum, Nicola, made emotional pleas on TV and in the newspapers for anyone to help and talked about her son extensively, explaining that he wasn't perfect, but he deserved to be searched for and found. She explained that she believed there were three theories in her mind for what may have happened in those early morning hours. She stated that Corrie could have been in a dreadful accident, went with a stranger in their car, or got a lift and had been taken to the wrong place. She suspected that Corrie getting into a stranger's car may have been the most likely possibility. In December 2016, it was announced that Corrie's grandparents, Mary and Oliver McKeague, were putting up a five-figure reward for anyone with information about his whereabouts, along with a £50,000 reward that had been put up by an anonymous couple who were business owners in Suffolk. It was hoped that with lots of media attention, the right people with information might come forward. CCTV images were released of people in the area of Bury St Edmunds that police wanted to speak to, as they were in the area at the time. Corrie's family also launched a fundraising campaign to hire a private investigator to help find him. Corrie's mum Nicola was critical of Suffolk Police's efforts to try and locate Corrie, stating that they were incompetent and didn't know what they were doing. This was something that Suffolk Police refuted and explained that they had already put a lot of resources into looking for Corrie. The whole investigation, however, was to be upended when information was discovered that changed the theory of what happened to Corrie yet again. This new information related to the weight of the bin lorry, and it would turn out that the weight was completely wrong. The lorry had more than 100 kilograms of weight that day, not just the 11 that they'd previously thought. This changed the theory dramatically, as it was now possible that Corrie was inside the bin truck. Information that a 26-year-old man had been arrested was also released to the public. It would become apparent that the 26-year-old was a Biffa Waste Management employee. Biffa were the company in charge of taking the rubbish away on that day. It emerged that this man had been arrested on charges of perverting the course of justice, but he was later released without any charges. The error with the lorry weight appeared to have been just a mistake that had had some serious implications for Corrie's investigation. As the landfill had not been searched at the time of his disappearance, the investigation was now on the back foot. The searches starting in February 2017, 5 months after he went missing. The search was a huge undertaking with tons and tons of rubbish sorted through and checked for any evidence that Corrie may have been there. His family had to come to terms with the fact that if Corrie was found in this search, that it would mean that the worst outcome would become a reality. Just 4 months into the search, however, it came to an abrupt end in July 2017. Police stated that they had checked every area where Corrie might have been, and that despite not finding any evidence to prove the theory that he may have been in the bin when he disappeared, detectives still said that they could find no evidence to support any other alternative theory either. There were many difficulties that were being faced by Suffolk police, as the landfill search was certainly not an easy task. There was 96,000 tonnes of rubbish dumped at that site each year, and it took months to locate where the specific rubbish from Bury St Edmunds would have been put. There was also the fact that 5 months had passed between his disappearance and the search, and so what remains would have still been visible at the site was unclear. The end of the search, however, was a devastating blow for Corrie's family, and his father Martin even went as far as blocking the site with his motorhome to try and get the police to reconsider. 25,000 people reportedly signed a petition urging the police to recommence the search. In the family's minds, they believed that if the theory was so strong that Corrie had been transported to the landfill site, then they should have at least found something related to him in there. However, there was nothing being recovered. Despite the search in July being called off, police did indeed revisit the site in October of 2017 to conduct another search. However, sadly, like the previous one, it uncovered nothing of relevance to the investigation. Corrie's family continued to try and publicise his case and talked about his disappearance in the media. Detectives were still working to identify all of the people who were seen on the CCTV footage in the same area and at the same time as Corrie. And everyone was eventually tracked down. Unfortunately, none of them could offer any further information about his disappearance or the events that evening. In March 2018, police made a statement saying that they were going to discontinue the search for Corrie, as there were reportedly no realistic lines of inquiry left to pursue. The search had cost £2.15 million, and sadly they were no closer to finding out what had actually happened to Corrie. There were still so many questions about the events that night, and his family were unhappy with the many inconsistencies of the investigation. Why did it take so long for the landfill to be searched if it was the police's only credible theory as to what happened? Why was CCTV from all of Sunday not searched to check for any sightings of Corrie after lunchtime? If he was transported in the bin truck, why has no trace of him been found at the landfill? As the years went by, his family kept investigating and asking questions of the police and their investigation. In November 2020, it was reported that the Biffa rubbish truck driver, that evening that picked up the bin in question, told Corrie's mum and the police that he saw Corrie standing nearby and therefore he could not have been inside the bin. She stated, "They have a statement from the lorry driver that was driving the lorry and his story has never changed. How could they be saying to me Corrie was in the bin if they had somebody saying they saw him outside the bin in the area at the time?" Nicola has explained that since Corrie's disappearance, there have been a number of claims made to her, including that a taxi driver beat him up and left him for dead after he was sick in his taxi on the way back to RAF Honington, and that after a robbery that went wrong, he was thrown into the bin. These claims, while unsubstantiated, could be important, and Nicola has said that she wants all angles to be investigated. An independent review of Suffolk Police was made in 2017, and it found that the force made a thorough investigation and that they explored all reasonable lines of inquiry. Corrie's family, however, continued to push for more answers for what happened to their son. It was announced in 2020 that a full inquest will be conducted on Corrie's disappearance. Corrie's mum stated, "Although I don't expect they're going to be able to tell us how he died, when he died, or where he died, what we're hoping is that after looking at all the evidence, they'll be able to tell me, and us as a family, that there is just nothing else that we could do, or be able to do, to find Corrie." This year, the pre-inquest review stated that the inquest, which is now scheduled for March and April 2022, will look at different parts of Corrie's disappearance and investigation, including the collection of the bin, the police search, and the results of the investigation. Nigel Parsley, senior coroner for Suffolk, who will now be in charge of the inquest, has stated that this will not be a review of the police's investigation, as this would be an inappropriate place for that. This was due to the review into the investigation that had already taken place in 2017. Police have prepared a 30-page document in preparation for this inquest, which lists all alternative theories that the investigation took into account. The inquest will also consider any risk-taking behaviour by Corey, his alcohol consumption, and his mental health at the time of his disappearance. Corey's family welcomed the inquest as a chance to finally get the facts out there in the public eye. His father Martin stated, "I'm still really struggling to come to terms with it. It's really important for us as a family, the McKeague family. It will all come out in the end, the truth will be coming out. I believe it's important the files and evidence will be read for everybody to see." The last 5 years that Corey has been missing have been absolute agony for his family, and the inconsistencies and unanswered questions have only added to their despair. In January 2017, the family were given some surprising and happy news. April Oliver, Corey's girlfriend at the time that he had disappeared, had found out that she was pregnant with their child. Neither had known at the time he went missing, and they had only been dating for 5 months before that. Ellie Louise was born in June 2017, and the family were overjoyed by the news. While still fighting for answers for Corey, they had something to cling on to, and a part of him with them always. Nicola stated on Facebook, under a picture of Ellie Louise and one of her other sons, "Some days are difficult. Trying to find something positive in each day always helps. I'm sharing a photo with each of you on this page. It was taken this morning while we're all sitting in the Suffolk sunshine. This is the hand of one of my sons being held by the daughter of his brother. This photo to me is simply beautiful. It gives me a strength I never realised I have. There are still so many unanswered questions about what has happened to Corey, but I do feel confident that all these will be investigated and answered. So many of you keep asking questions we're all also asking. I just wanted to let you all know my determination to find Corey is as strong as ever." Suffolk police have stated that the active inquiry into Corey's disappearance has been closed and that there has been no progress in the case. They told the BBC in September of this year, "Unless any new, realistic and credible information becomes available, then the investigation is complete. There is no information available at this time that changes the status of the current investigation." This is where Corey's case is now, and it's so sad that nothing more has been found to point to what happened. The evidence throws up more questions than answers, and we're all left with the one lingering thought: what happened when Corey went into that horseshoe area in Bury St Edmunds? His family are left wondering this constantly, and not knowing is horrific for them. The inquest will hopefully give them some answers to their questions, and there is hope with Corey's case that someone may know where he is and can fill in some of the gaps for his family. His parents and his daughter deserve to know. If you know anything about the disappearance of Corey McKeague, please contact Suffolk Police on 101. Thank you for listening to today's episode, and thank you as always to my Patreon supporters. If you'd like to support the podcast on there, you can receive bonus episodes, early ad-free access, and stickers and shout-outs. The link is in the show notes. If you want to support us in other ways, you can, by reviewing the podcast wherever you listen, and also sharing it with your friends. You can also follow us on social media at Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, and also on YouTube where you can subscribe to the channel. Remember, if you want to come to CrimeCon next year in June in London, you can buy tickets now. And if you use my code UNSEEN, you get 10% off. And if you're already a patron of mine, you can get 15% off. The link is in the show notes. Send any thoughts, suggestions, and episode submissions to theunseenpod@gmail.com. I love hearing from all of you. As always, many thanks for listening. I'm Caprice, and this has been Unseen. Thank you.
Thank you.